And guests, and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Jerome Corsi. And Dr. Corsi, a Harvard graduate, he writes regularly for the World Debt Daily. We carry several of his books, The Minuteman, his latest book, which is certainly one of the bestsellers, The Late Great USA, going into the effort to betray our country and certainly move us into the North American Union with the destruction of American sovereignty and the destruction of American freedom. Well, good morning, good evening, Dr. Corsi. How are you tonight?
Great, Dr. Stan. Real pleasure and honor to be with you. Thank you.
Well, I certainly, one of the things I'd really like to talk about is a fascinating article you wrote for WorldNet Daily talking about the latest excursion into police state tyranny when the executive branch of our government passed several presidential directives. One of them, of course, was the Homeland Security Directive 20. The other was the National Security Directive 51, which would allow the president, without the permission of Congress, without even consulting Congress, to turn over dictatorial control to one of the administrators there in FEMA, or Office of Homeland Security, and basically removing all freedom as we know it in the United States, in the case, of course, of an emergency. But prior to this time, certainly this at least had to be reported to Congress and approved by Congress. How can the president do this without consulting Congress? And you keep talking in this presidential directive about the Constitution.
Well, Dr. Stan, I reported that these presidential directives, it was Homeland Security, National Security Presidential Directive 51, and it was Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20. They were placed on the White House website on May 9th, and these two directives specified that the president could determine when there was a national emergency, but the definition of national emergency was essentially whenever the president declared there was a national emergency. And as soon as the national emergency was declared, with no specific reference to these directives that it necessarily go to Congress, or Congress, even under the National Emergency Act, would have the same powers, some 20 days, to revise this declaration of emergency, these new directives seem to supersede the National Emergency Act. And once the emergency was declared, then the president could take over the operation of all levels of government, which include the federal, state, local, even territorial and tribal levels. And I wrote in WorldNet Daily that this is a power grab, an exceptional power grab, where the president is declaring for himself the kind of dictatorial powers that even the ancient Roman council would have loved to have had, where they used the same kind of maneuver to say there was a national emergency, so the council in ancient Rome had to become dictators and take over operation of the government, send the Senate home. Senate in ancient Rome protected the Roman people and liberties, and these directives are equally a power grab by President Bush.
This is really what's so incredible. It's been totally ignored by the controlled media, other than your writing about it, and a few articles on the Internet the average person doesn't understand. The background, they don't understand the National Emergency Act passed in 1976 because Congress feared that the presidential authority would be used one day to establish a dictatorship. And that is the official law of the land acted on by Congress, but apparently George Bush really doesn't pay much attention to Congress or the laws. He is a power unto himself, and that's really what's so terribly frightening about these presidential directives that came out on the 9th of May. Well, go right ahead. Pick the story up there, please, Jerome.
Well, Dr. Stan, these directives, which President Bush declared, the National Security Presidential Directive 51 and Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20, you know, and as I explored them, the White House had no comment on them, but they established within the Office of the President, the Assistant for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism, who is Frances Townsend. She comes from 13 years at the Justice Department at the Coast Guard, where she was the Assistant Commandant for Intelligence. She takes over a lot of authorities under this to be able to work with the President, declare there's a national emergency, and then to take over all operations of government. Now, this is particularly of concern in the, you know, the context of the Patriot Act and the other assumptions of power by the President, that we've got in place a situation where our whether it be a civil disorder, a riot, a terrorist event, a Katrina-type event, whatever it is, the President could say, okay, there's a national emergency, I'm taking over all levels of government, and I'm in charge. Now, I encourage people not to be evaluating these presidential directives, some people, by the President. People say, oh, I may like George Bush. I don't think George Bush would ever, you know, usurp this power to do anything to harm our liberties. But then I say, well, look, you know, think about it as if it were President Hillary Clinton. And she's going to have these powers, too, and these power grabs last. You know, our founding fathers said don't look at power in terms of the Constitution with regards to personality. Look at it in terms of the structure of power and what that's being granted to do. And of course, our founding fathers knew what ancient Romans used to do. I mean, they could have declared national emergency powers in the Constitution if they wanted, but they had just dealt with George III, and they had just revolted against George III. They didn't want the possibility in the Constitution of another, you know, President George W. coming into being. That's why the separation of powers was set into being in the Constitution. It's why we have a limited constitutional government with the powers of the President and the federal government being very defined and being very limited. Unless the powers are specifically declared to the federal government, they reside in the states. And this seems to completely reverse the equation, so the President, in terms of national security emergencies or any kind of national emergency, disasters, hurricanes, riots like we had in the 60s, you name it, the President...
Well, that's all right there. We're going to be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Corsi was simply saying that according to the presidential directives, they were passed on the 9th of May. There were two of them, the Office of Homeland Security, which is, I believe, 20, and the Office of the National Security Presidential Directive 51, basically were different than anything we've ever had before, because now unilaterally the President, without consulting Congress, in violation of the National Emergency Act passed back in 1976, when Congress was very concerned. Of course, we'd just gone through the Vietnam War. We know that President Nixon at one time was actually considering very seriously establishing a dictatorship in America. He didn't want to be impeached. He didn't want to give up his tapes. He wanted to maintain his power. And there was talk at that time, and we've talked to people who lived through that. They were concerned about the President declaring a dictatorship, so they actually passed something known as the National Emergency Act. But it required the President, in case of a national emergency, to go through Congress. Now, what's so significant, and the fact that Dr. Corsi brings out here, is that there is nothing in this directive. And you can get it off the Internet, although it is contained in a new syllabus we're putting together called the Plan Police State, which I hope everyone will want to get. But you could pull it down off the Internet, simply type in presidential directives and, you know, in May 9th, and you'll be able to pull it down. But there is no requirement for going to Congress. There is no time limitation on this. It is a dictatorship as long as Hillary Clinton or Obama or Sidney, whoever the next president would want it to be. and there is no stipulation at all that this power grab, certainly the greatest power grab since the days of ancient Rome, would be repealed when George Bush leaves the presidency. So, certainly, what can be done about this, Dr. Corsi?
Well, it's in the context, it's going to be, I'm trying to write a series of articles to bring this to the attention of the American people, Dr. Stan, because we've had a series of steps being taken. We had the John Warner Appropriations Act, which in 2007 basically repealed posse comitatus, which said that the president can, in emergencies, declare that federal troops, you know, could be involved in a domestic situation directly. So it authorizes the president to nationalize the to federalize the National Guard. The National Guard is now under the president's control, and to also put U.S. troops into domestic situations when the president declares that there is an emergency. Always before, with posse comitatus, these acts that go back to the Civil War, the president had state authority first over the National Guard and had to have certain state declarations of emergencies and asking the state governor for federal assistance before federalizing the National Guard or bringing federal troops into a situation could occur. Now, with these recent laws, the John Warner Appropriations Act of 2007 and these recent presidential directives, National Security Directive 51 and Homeland Security Directive 20, these presidential directives, the president seems to be moving into a power position where the federal government, on its own authority, can declare an emergency and move either the National Guard under federal control or federal troops into domestic situations.
Well, you know what's really so frightening about that, Jerome, is the fact that our military is not trained for police work. It's trained to do two things, to kill people and destroy things. That's the purpose of the military. It's to win wars. It's not to function in a police aspect, and certainly they are not trained for that. And that's what we have police force, not military people, not people who are trained to kill. And of course, here they would be asked to shoot and use their weapons against civilians. They don't have any shields. They don't have any helmets. They don't have any batons. They don't have certainly the tear gas and other things you'd use. They have high-powered rifles. Remember what happened during the Vietnam War in Kent State, where you took a group of National Guardsmen and armed with high-powered rifles, you put them into a dangerous situation, and unfortunately, the troops did what troops are trained to do. They defended themselves with high-powered rifles, and a lot of innocent students at Kent State were murdered by the police, by the military, and of course they never should have put the military into that sort of a situation. With that background of knowledge, why would the president want to use, you know, the military, not trained for police work, for control here in the United States against American citizens?
Well, as Dr. said, I've been reporting too that we've created now U.S. NORTHCOM, which is a continental military command. It is continental in scope. It's out in Cheyenne Mountain. And it's being designed to use the U.S. military again in domestic situations. I mean, I was out in Colorado Springs. I'm going to be writing about it in WorldNet Daily. We've just gone through a series of exercises, gaming, three radiological dirty bombs being detonated in Oregon, in Arizona, and in Guam. And at U.S. NORTHCOM, in the command facility, the U.S. military is sitting at the center of coordinating the activity of FEMA and of about 40 different organizations to dictate the federal government's response to the emergency. Now, these games do put the military through a series of exercises in which kind of evolutionary, kind of a step-by-step method, without thinking hard about these, you know, distinctions that used to be in place between the military not being involved in domestic situations. Now the military is being trained to take over the national response to emergency situations. And that's, again, a difference of order in the federal response to emergency situations that the Bush administration is bringing about kind of without under the radar, without public discussion, without very much public awareness.
Well, that's another thing. Why wouldn't they announce this to the public? You commented in your article that there were no public press releases at all. This was done very quietly, almost as if they didn't want the American people to know. Why would they try to conceal this from the American people?
Well, they're putting the infrastructure in place. The Bush administration is putting the infrastructure in place of a ability of the federal government to come in and use a military response to control an emergency situation at the direction of the president, with or without the explicit approval of Congress. And with these directives being put into place, important questions that ought to be debated in the Congress, ought to be before the American people. Now, do these new presidential directives supersede the National Emergency Act? With the U.S. NORTHCOM preparing for a domestic response by the U.S. military, is this a new definition of the U.S. military where it will now take on a domestic mission? Crisis and emergency situations declared by the president, when before we always involved the military only in foreign wars. It's an entirely new mission that is being defined for the military, and is being defined without any real conscious public debate or new laws being passed by the Congress or the American people in any way aware of the changes that are being formed.
Now, I would think that if you're going to use the military against Americans, you would arm them with shotguns, something like that. I mean, a high-powered rifle is meant to do one thing. It's meant to kill. Why would the president want to use those on American citizens? And I'm certainly reminded of what Thomas Jefferson had said when he said, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. Well, when you read this piece of these directives, they frequently refer to the Constitution, but they never tell you where in the Constitution the president has a right to become a dictator, unparalleled since ancient Rome.
And, you know, also, Dr. Stan, another kind of bizarre feature of these presidential directives is that they're under the title of continuity of government in the case of an emergency. In other words, it is identical to what the ancient Romans said. They said that our continuance of government is so at risk that in order to preserve the Constitution, we have to, in a sense, cancel the Constitution. So the president takes over all authorities to make sure the government continues to exist. It reminds me identically of the ancient Roman council declaring themselves emperors and saying to the Roman Senate, go home, we'll protect you. It is not a continuity of government. It's a complete power grab by the executive in an emergency to assert the executive powers as supreme over the other two branches and to take over.
And of course, basically, it's a transformation of government, and we're doing away with certainly with the three branches of government. We will have one branch of government, and that will be the executive, dictator.
Self-justified by the declaration of an emergency, which is identical to the formula the ancient Roman council used. I mean, that we would allow this to simply slip in through these presidential directives without aggressive debate, to me, is shocking in terms of the American public not being awake and not being alarmed that these presidential directives put into place within our constitutional republic a structure that's nowhere defined in the Constitution. There's no emergency powers defined for the president anywhere in the Constitution. And it's writing into the Constitution ancient Roman tricks where the council became dictators. And it's now in place in the U.S. legal structure with these declarations declared by President Bush in May of this year.
Well, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Locally, it's 464-8295. I guess is Dr. Jerome Corsi. But we're talking about these presidential directives that came out on the 9th of May of 2007. But they are simply the culmination of a series of dictatorial pieces of legislation, the Military Commission Act, the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, actually giving money to Halliburton, one of the subsidiaries, to stand by to build concentration camps. What are they talking about, or what do they have in mind? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Jerome Corsi. And, you know, as we look at the series of events that are taking place, and if it was just this one isolated incident, it would be...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Into this country, number one. Number two, there have been over six years since the September 11th attack, not one major terrorist attack. You would think Osama bin Laden, if he could have gotten 19 hijackers to come into America to commit suicide, crashing the planes into the Twin Towers, why he could have found one suicide bomber to come into America with explosives and certainly detonated in a crowded place in America. We're told we're involved in a war on terrorism, and this is why we have to have all of this legislation. But the question is, does the administration really believe we're involved in a war on terrorism, or is everything we see at the airport simply smoke and mirrors to convince the American people we're involved in a war on terrorism? And the other question is, this threat of terrorism that is justifying these draconian laws under the guise that if we don't have the government the ability to have a dictatorship in America, Osama bin Laden will take away our freedom as he sits over there in a cave somewhere in Pakistan with a laptop computer on his lap and, of course, reading by the candlelight. So Osama bin Laden's a threat. We've got to react to it. We've got to pass legislation, as Dr. Corsi says, unparalleled since the days of ancient Rome, that will simply make freedom as we know it become a remembrance of things past. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and this is simply the culmination of a number of pieces of legislation and acts setting up concentration camps or the ability to establish concentration camps across America. And you have to ask yourself, what do they have in mind? So pick up the story. You were saying that you were actually up in Canada when they were having this meeting, President Bush meeting with the leaders of both Canada and Mexico as they're planning on doing away with the sovereignty of America and creating this North American Union or the North American Community. Call it what you will. It is the end of sovereignty as we know it. So what happened at that meeting you attended?
Well, at the meeting, the Security and Prosperity Partnership meeting, third summit, in Montebello, Quebec. It was August 20 and 21st this year, 2007. And I was there three rows behind the Fox News reporter who asked President Bush, said, could the Security and Prosperity Partnership lead to a North American Union and NAFTA superhighways? And President Bush didn't answer the question. Remarkably, what he did is use ridicule. He said that, and this is the problem, every time we question these issues, President Bush said, well, only a conspiracy theorist would believe that. People are just trying to scare the American people to raise these issues. But, you know, since the days of Demosthenes, the ancient Greek orators, we've known that ridicule in a debate is the last refuge of a scoundrel. In other words, President Bush, instead of answering the question, called us names. And that's because President Bush didn't have an answer in logic or evidence or argumentation that could show why, you know, like in Europe, where these economic agreements, the coal and steel agreement, the European Economic Community became the European Common Market and then the European Union with its own currency, the euro. Well, why can't that happen here? Why can't we go from NAFTA, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, through a North American community or North American Common Market, end up with the North American Union and the Amero? I mean, our leader calling our new currency the Amero, why can't it happen? So in all these issues, Dr. Sam, what's happening is that the administration is grabbing power, moving into these global structures where our freedoms are being taken away and our borders opened. And we've got a war on terror, but yet our borders aren't secured. And I documented fully in the late great USA that Hezbollah terrorists who are in federal prison from Dearborn, Michigan, were sending money to Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. They bribed Mexican consular officials in Beirut and came across the border with Mexico. It's a fully documented case. President Bush knows it. But yet our borders aren't secured, and we have these new emergency powers coming in that as soon as we question them, we're the conspiracy theorists. It doesn't make sense unless you say this administration is fundamentally changing the Constitution, grabbing power, does not want the American people to know it or question it.
Well, of course, you know, anybody has to just read the history of what happened in the European Union, and the leaders of Europe lied to the public. In fact, even Jacques Monnet, who was one of the founders of this whole thing, years later admitted it was all a lie. Well, we couldn't tell the European people we were going to unite the country. They want to keep their sovereignty. And there are people, elitists, a very smart group, I think they know so much more what's good for us than the average American. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this evening is Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're talking about certainly the draconian pieces of legislation that have been enacted. It's almost as if somebody's planning a dictatorship in America, or perhaps they feel that the American people won't want to give up their freedom, and as a result, why they're going to have to be prepared in case the common people don't want to go along with their agenda. Because there are people who hate America. And, of course, he just keeps talking. These people have an agenda, and that is, of course, they want to establish this one-world government. They think the world would be better off under their control and a one-world government, a new world religion, and, of course, they will stop at nothing to do that. And I believe this is the plan that is being first implemented in Europe by lies, and that is being implemented in the United States by lies. But why would our president not answer the questions on this? Why would he resort to ridicule and, of course, avoid totally answering the question, are you part of an effort to destroy the sovereignty of our country?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, this is the point that should make everyone suspicious. In other words, when a government like the Bush administration issues these new exceptional directives, like the National Security Presidential Directive 51 and Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20, allowing the president to declare these new emergency powers. When a contract is given out to KBR, a former subsidiary of Halliburton, some $350 million to be on a standby basis, ready to build detention centers wherever the Department of Homeland Security directs. And Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America forms these working groups, and we're opening our borders to Mexico and Canada and integrating with Mexico and Canada in the same exact structure that Europe did. We should be able to question, why are these fundamental constitutional changes being made by administrative order and bureaucratic decision? These are issues which legitimately ought to be able to be questioned by an American public that's informed, and it ought to be able to be brought to Congress so the Congress can hold hearings and examine whether the administration is operating outside the Constitution or whether there needs to be new laws or new treaties. None of this is being done. And every time we raise a question, we're called the conspiracy theorists. But yet, Dr. Stan, nothing that's happening here really makes sense.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. Jerome Corsi here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Before we go on, Dr. Corsi, I want you to get out your telephone number, your webpage, where people can get your information. Now, we carry your books, the Minutemen and the book Late Great USA, which incidentally is one of the finest books on this subject. It is the finest book on this subject available. But let's go ahead and get your information out.
Well, Dr. Stan, the readers can go and listeners can go to worldnetdaily.com. I'm a staff reporter on WorldNet Daily, and I'm writing there almost every day. And that's where my current articles are, and they support the issues I've developed in the late, great USA, coming merger with Mexico and Canada, and also the book on the Minutemen, which I co-authored with Jim Gilchrist, the founder of the Minutemen Project. So the best way is to go to worldnetdaily.com and read my writings there and keep up with what I'm doing.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Jack, do you have a question for our guest?
Well, I do.
Now, if I could please, just go ahead and get the question in.
Well, let me just preface this by saying that, believe it or not, today a librarian downloaded the Senate Report 93-549, War and Emergency Powers Act, from November of 73. And it's very interesting because it states here that since March 9th of 33, U.S. has been in a state of declared national emergency.
Yes, we put that, of course, is why they did the National Emergency Act there in 76. We offer that report to any of our listeners that like to get it. In fact, it's included in our new syllabus, the planned pop police statement. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, well, in fact, Dr. Stan, pursuant to what you just said, I often wondered where did they concoct this idea that the president had to have this extraordinary power, authority, when I thought Congress was endowed with the constitutionally mandated authority.
Let's ask Dr. Corsi, where did the president get the right? Certainly, the report that Jack is speaking of came out in 1973, came from the Senate over the signatures of Senator Charles Mathias and Senator Frank Church, pointing out that at that time there were over 400 laws in place, mostly executive orders, that allowed for the establishment of a dictatorship here in the United States independent of the Constitution. And they were very, very concerned in 73. So where did the president get the right to make these executive orders? And of course, this started with Lincoln, and it went on to President Wilson, and then President Roosevelt, and then, of course, Harry Truman, and then, of course, President Nixon. Each during wartime or time of emergency, the president taking on more powers, and other than Woodrow Wilson, never giving up any of their powers. So where did the authority come from?
Well, there is no authority, Dr. Stanley, in the Constitution. This is simply done by the president. They simply assert the authority by signing these presidential directives and executive orders. They're totally unconstitutional. And it's been a disgrace that Congress does not challenge this assertion of authority by the president. And the American people need to challenge it and demand the Congress stand up and assert authority to say these are unconstitutional executive orders and should be stricken down. Also, the Supreme Court is totally asleep at the switch, not getting immediately involved and declaring the presidents do not have this authority to rewrite the Constitution in the favor of the presidency. I mean, again, this is a complete dereliction of duty on behalf of both the Congress and the Supreme Court. And the president, since Lincoln, has just known that they could get away with it, so they did it.
And I think that's really what's so important. Jack, you have to understand that there is no authority. This is unconstitutional. And yet, of course, these executive orders, if applied, would supersede the Constitution. And for our listeners out there, we have prepared a great new syllabus. It's called the Planned Police State. It contains the article, the report from the Senate, 1973, that Jack is talking about, and of course this was the prelude to the National Security Act of 1976. But there have been always people in Congress, at least in years past, concerned about the possibility of a dictatorship in America. I just wonder why the average American isn't concerned. Anything else you want to say, Jack, before we let you go?
Yes, Dr. Stan, I just quickly, in this Senate report, 93-549, they go on to say here that these crises have shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. And then the next paragraph says, the American political theory of emergency government is derived in large from John Locke.
No, it has nothing to do with John Locke. That's a totally fallacious statement.
Well,
thanks so much there, Jack. And Sidney, are you acquainted with that report that came out in 73 over the signature of Charles Mathias and Frank Church?
Yes, I am, Dr. Sam.
I'm sure you are. And I think everybody of our listeners really need to get this information and to understand that there is a very real danger of dictatorship in America, and why shouldn't there be? This nation has turned against God. This nation has repudiated its concepts of justice and advocates and allows the torturing of innocent people. And where is the outcry from our ministers and our religious leaders? Why, it's deafening and it's silence. And one day, I really sincerely fear that God is going to bring justice on America. Go right ahead, Dr. Corsi.
Well, Dr. Sandy, you know, there's plenty of evidence as we look around. Just look at the most recent activities with regards to Mexico. We're letting the Mexican trucks come across the border under this Mexican truck demonstration project that the Department of Transportation is going to allow 100 Mexican trucking companies to run their long-haul rigs anywhere in Mexico, from Mexico into the United States, 100 companies, so that could be thousands of trucks. And Congress has voted two amendments to the Department of Transportation funding bill to take the money out of the Department of Transportation's budget for this Mexican trucking demonstration project. But because the president has not yet signed it, because it's not come out of conference committee, instead of respecting Congress and the will of the American people expressed through Congress and halting the demonstration project until we see if the president's going to sign the bill with those amendments in it, the Department of Transportation just said, we'll ignore it. Not law yet. Nobody's stopping us, so we'll keep running the trucks. Now, at the same time, last week, President Bush came and said he's going to have a $500 million military aid package from Mexico to help Mexican military fight the drug war, and it was slipped into the Iraq supplemental funding bill at the bottom of the bill. Now, it's amazing because trucks are still the major way that drugs are brought into the United States. The Drug Enforcement Administration openly demonstrates that and validates that. So how can it be that on one hand, we've got to give Mexico $100 million because Mexico is losing the drug war. We give that to the Mexican military, even though the Mexican military is largely working with the drug lords, escorting and protecting drug shipments into the United States. And at the same time, we don't recognize the contradiction, you know, the complete disconnect that we're letting Mexican trucks across the border every day. I mean, why don't we have a sane policy here which says, let's secure the border, let's let Mexico keep the drugs, and we don't need any Mexican trucks in the United States? The only explanation is that we are determined open the border with Mexico, and this is what the Security and Prosperity Partnership is all about.
Well, my understanding was that the legislature of the state of Texas, representing the feeling of the people there, overwhelmingly voted against the Trans-Texas Highway or the NAFTA Superhighway, and then, of course, it didn't really matter what the people wanted. Didn't seem to matter what the elected representatives, I think, the vote, I remember, I think there were only two or three people who voted against it. Everybody else was going to restrict it, and yet they're simply ignoring totally the vote of the people.
Well, that's right.
The vote of the legislature. It seems like we have an imperial presidency.
There were six different laws coming out of the Texas legislature to block the Trans-Texas Corridor, including a two-year moratorium. And Governor Perry vetoed them all.
So there were not enough votes to override the veto?
I thought
there were enough votes.
He vetoed them after he voted at least half of them after the legislature was out of session. And he vetoed the remainder of them just before the legislature went out of session.
Why don't they call back an emergency session then? And
only the governor can call back the legislature. And it takes 2 years before the legislature comes back. They'll have to reintroduce these measures all over again.
Well, I hope the people then will vote Richardson out and certainly let them know that they want a governor who represents them rather than the special interest groups, the people of great power, because that's what this is all about. This is the internationalists. These are the globalists who certainly want to destroy America. And I guess Richardson's going right along with them, isn't he?
Governor Perry is going along with it.
All right.
And, you know, I was just down in Houston this weekend. Gave a speech down there to over 300 people who are in the Texas for Immigration Reform, new organization that's formed, angry about the Trans-Texas Corridor, trying to block it. But Dr. Stan, these measures that are taken, there's so much money behind this globalization from the multinational corporations. Governor Perry's major campaign contributions come from Sintra, this Spanish investment consortium that's going to build the Trans-Texas Corridor, and Bracewell and Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani's law firm in Houston, that is a sole representative of Sintra, Spanish investment consortium that's going to build the Trans-Texas Corridor and collect tolls on it for 50 years after the highway is built. So the money agenda here and the globalism that is attacking our Constitution and setting up in place an imperial presidency who's rapidly creating a North American Union and setting up emergency powers to resist any, but to, you know, override, to overrun anybody who resists these globalist tendencies. I mean, the same thing would be if we've got a war on terror, secure the borders. We've got a war on drugs, build a fence and keep the drugs out. We don't need a Trans-Texas Corridor connecting down to Mexican ports, Lazaro Cardenas and Manzanilla. We don't need $500 million for the Mexican military to fight the drug war, which the Mexican military is intentionally losing. And we don't need the idea that Mexican trucks can just roll across the border when we know that Mexican trucks are the main way drugs get into the United States. These make no sense at all. Unless you assume that the policy of the presidency really is globalism.
Well, I think that we can talk about it all we want to about the war on drugs, but the United States has controlled Afghanistan completely for the last 6 years. Afghanistan's the largest producer of heroin in the world, and our sex were just thinking maybe we ought to do something about the heroin crop every year. They have all the excuses for not doing it, but, the lingering question in my mind is the war on drugs really a war on drugs to stop drugs, or is it a war on the American people and certain segments of our population? And, of course, certainly we know that so many of our young black people are in prison, probation, or parole. One-third of the young black population, young black men, prison, probation, or parole, primarily related to drugs. And you have to ask why, when you've controlled an entire nation for 6 years, you couldn't spray their crops and destroy the heroin there. Lots of excuses why, but the logic tells you maybe the war on terrorism is like the war on cancer, like the war on drugs, like the war on poverty. And we have more poverty, more drugs, more cancer, of course, and the more terrorism. All right, fine. Well, let's go to Donna, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Donna. Did you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. Does your guest have any idea what any citizen such as myself can do the face of trucks coming over the border into Michigan, bringing amazing amounts of trash?
All right, fine. Well, what can the average individual do about what's going on, Dr. Corsi? Because I think Donna expressed a feeling of so many people. Well, I'm just one person. What can I do faced with this? This juggernaut of the people of great wealth and great power in America who seem to want to betray America and establish this this global society of which the North American community is an integral part.
Well, I think I've said there's a grassroots revolution across the country where the people are just saying no. They're saying they've had it on these issues. And they want the borders secured. If there's going to be a war on terror, we want secure borders, a war on drugs, we want secure borders, we want to win these wars. And I see 14 states now that have passed resolutions to get out of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. They have no North American Union, no NAFTA superhighways. I mean, the one thing these plans and plots cannot stand is the light of day. We've got to have demand, congressmen and senators that will hold hearings on these presidential directives, hearings on the Security and Prosperity Partnership. If they don't, then let's notify the senators and congressmen that will vote them out of office and get others in that will raise these issues. I'm finding that copies of my book, The Late Great USA, and questions from it are getting increasingly asked. Senators and congressmen and talk show hosts like Michael Medved that just want to support Republicans, calling them Bush bots these days, like robots. You push a button and they just support Republicans. I think the American people are tired of it. American people want answers, and they've seen that Republicans and Democrats alike have been selling us down the river to these globalist forces, and we're tired of it.
And I think really, of course, the issue, if it could be brought up at the state, even at city council, Donna, go to your city council, go to your board of supervisors, go to your state legislators. Get them talking about it. Get other people talking about it. Do we want to maintain our sovereignty? Do we want to give up our sovereignty and merge into this North American Union? And as with the European Union, are we being lied to? And, of course, ask that question. Why are they lying to the American people? Why have they done everything they could to circumvent the will of the people in Texas with the Trans-Texas Highway? and the will of the legislature, which voted overwhelmingly, and using all these dubious techniques, dishonest techniques, to suddenly get this highway under construction, where they're actually using the right of eminent domain to take private property to give it to a foreign corporation. I mean, that's the most incredible thing in the world.
Uh-huh.
Anything else, Donna, before we let you go?
Well, I have heard that the Michigan legislature has voted against having all this Canadian trash come in every day.
Well, why don't you check that out, verify it, and then give us a call back and let us know what's going on. Would you do that for us?
Well, I've been told that they can't do anything because of NAFTA.
Now, they can do something, and they can make it public. And then, of course, because the one thing the people fear is an angry and concerned American citizen. So,
okay.
But find out for sure what's going on, and then would you give us a call later?
Yes.
All right, fine. Thanks very much. Well,
thank
this
you.
Is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes to wrap up the program. The question is, could we lose our freedom in America? Is there a program to change America? And we're going to take Tom's call in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, I guess we lost Tom there. I'm sorry. I hope to get his call during the break. Well, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What's a major message you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, Darcen, I wrote the Like Right USA to bring, you know, there's 30 pages of footnotes, and people can go and see the government website on which the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America is being conducted. So they can see the opening of the borders, the integrating with Mexico and Canada is going on, websites like spp.gov, the Department of Commerce website for the Security and Prosperity Partnership, read the 2005-2006 report to the leaders, look at these working groups that are changing our laws, the bureaucrats working with Mexico and Canadian bureaucrats, keeptexasmoving.com, where you can see the Trans-Texas Corridor. And Dr. Stan, there is great, we've got three candidates, Republican candidates, who are talking about these issues now directly. Ron Paul from Texas, Duncan Hunter from California, and Tom Tancredo, Colorado. We need to support these candidates. Virgil Goode, Congressman Republican from Virginia, has House Concurrent Resolution 40 to, in the House, say no NAFTA superhighways, no North American Union, get out of the SPP. There is a backlash. There's a grassroots effort. People are communicating. There are groups being formed. Listeners need to get informed and involved. Because it's not too late. If it was too late, I wouldn't have written the book. But Like Great USA indicates the steps we can take to unite even on a state level. State legislatures passed more resolutions. Ohio just introduced a resolution to block the SPP and the North American Union. State after state, if this movement grows, we have the power to rise up and say to our constitutional authorities, the Congress, to act, hold hearings, get involved, or we'll get a new Congress in place. And the same with the president. We need to have a president who's responsible to we the people, and if that's not going to be done, whether it's George W. Bush or Hillary Clinton or Giuliani, whomever, let's start holding impeachment hearings and demanding accountability to the Constitution.
And I really think that's really what's so absolutely vital at this point. We have to demand that the president upholds his oath, and that is to uphold our Constitution. The SPP is the renouncement of our Constitution. Doing away with, of course, the constitutional guarantees of freedom as we merge America first economically and then step by step, as they have in Europe, into an international community. Jerome, thank you so very much for being with us. God bless. Good night.
Good night, Dr. Stan. Always a pleasure and honor to be with you. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our program with Dr. Jerome Corsi. We have an excellent syllabus that covers much of this, and the report that Jack called in about from Michigan, we actually is included in this new syllabus, the plan to police state. And certainly we have a talk It'll be available probably in a couple of weeks on DVD, but we have four tape sets. We have one on the North American Union. We have one on the Military Commission Act, which, of course, covers most of that information. And then, of course, you could order the CD or audio tape of the tonight's program with Dr. Corsi. You must understand that there are people who have a different world view. And they really do see nothing wrong with a dictatorship under a ruling elite. And once you understand that, there's so much of what goes on that makes sense. Why they take us from war to war, why they took us into a no-win war in Vietnam, where we lost 58,000 people, but we never talk about the million South Vietnamese and the 2 million North Vietnamese we killed. What if we talk about them? Are their lives pretty unimportant? Their suffering is unimportant? We talk about the thousands of American soldiers lost in Iraq, but what about all the Iraqi citizens? Is their suffering something we shouldn't be concerned about? How can Christians back an administration that says we don't torture, and yet, of course, they passed the Military Commission Act, and you should read the Military Commission Act or House Resolution 3835. That's H.R. 3835, introduced by Ron Paul, that simply repeals the Military Commission Act and points out that they authorize torture. Not only they authorize it, but they give freedom from prosecution for people who've already committed torture. In other words, a retroactive protection against those people who've committed torture before this law that's passed that allows torture, and doing away with the right of habeas corpus, and doing away with the right of judicial appeal, and allows indefinite incarceration. Of course, they say it's simply for people who are not citizens, but how would you ever prove you're a citizen if you never had a right for habeas corpus, if you never had the ability to have a court intervene, and that's stipulated in that legislation? Understand there are people with a different worldview. And, of course, unless the American people are willing to stand up and protest and fight for their freedom. And our battle today is with ideas. You've got to help us get the information out. You're welcome to copy our syllabus if you get it, and to copy it if our four tape sets, and to encourage other people to listen to our programs. We carry Dr. Jerome Corsi's book, The Late Great USA. We think it is a great book because it brings out so much information that the average individual has never heard of. They don't understand the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and the government is simply lying about this. There are people within Congress who are concerned, but most people don't know because the media is controlled by 75 mega corporations that control 95% of the major media, and as a result, they largely control what the American people hear on radio, see on television, or read in the publications. And believe me, to get a book published that tells the truth is difficult. Now, Dr. Corsi was very lucky. He works with WorldNet Daily. They have their own publishing outlets and means of distribution. But for the average individual, to get a book that tells the truth is almost impossible. Certainly, the recent book we've just started to carry on the Bilderbergers sold over 1.5 million copies in Europe, and yet not one single American major distributor would print this book and distribute it. After selling 1.5 million copies in Europe, why wouldn't they distribute it? Why? Because any editor who would allow that book to be distributed here would lose his job. Fortunately, they got Chris Milliken, and he does a small publishing house. So he's printed the book, and we'd carry it, the Bilderbergers. And, of course, the author has had his life endangered. They've tried to kill him. They've tried to bribe him. The last thing they want you to know is there really are groups of people, groups of wicked and evil people, who, of course, want the world government. If you haven't seen Satanic Crimes, the video, the four-tape set, we have both the four-tape set on that and the book, that's Satanic Crimes. It goes into the Bilderbergers and their Satanic Crimes. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, right now they're going to be those of Barry Shamish, who's a Jewish patriot, who's an investigative reporter, was forced to leave Israel because his life was under attack and was threatened. And but he is, of course, their loss is our gain, because Barry has many, many fascinating stories. And this evening we're going to talk, well, we're going to talk about some of the things going on over in Israel. So without further ado, Barry Shamish, how are you tonight, Barry?
Oh, not bad, thank you.
You go right ahead.
Well, let's begin with this immense cover-up of the Rabin assassination. You know, Yigal Amir is going to have a baby.
I understand. He's the gentleman who supposedly shot the prime minister, but it is your contention he was not the one who shot him. He was shot by the Israeli counterpart of the FBI. Is that right?
Yeah, the bodyguard, Yoram Rubin, did him in. But the thing with Amir's baby that is all over the Internet today, it's going to be born on November 4th, the 12th anniversary of Rabin's assassination. And believe me, this is somehow concocted. Look, I'm not in the psychological department of the Shabak. I don't know how this is going to affect people or why they're doing it, but this person had no right to conjugal visits. He wasn't married to the woman they claim he was married to. There was no rabbi. There was no ring. There was no written vow called the ketubah. They just decided they were married, so they're married. You don't get conjugal visits until you get that license in Israel's version of City Hall. So how did he get her pregnant, number one? But number two, who's arranging this thing that on November 4th he's going to have a son? As fantastic as this story sounds, it's true. This is the word. This is the word from Israel, and it's going to kick off a lot of people, let me tell you. But psychologically, I cannot begin to understand why this event is taking place.
Well, the other thing is, why is somebody putting up a lot of money to try to get Amir out? And certainly some of the money is going to people in the Shin Bet who were involved with the assassination of the prime minister so many years ago, 12 years ago. All of this doesn't make sense.
Well, I wouldn't say trying to get him out. The group is composed of two longtime Shabak workers. One is Avigdor Eskin, the other is Itamar Ben-Gvir, and supposedly an American millionaire gave them vast sums of money to put out a movie to free Amir, but they don't claim that he didn't murder Rabin, quite the opposite. And this is the beauty, once again, if you're in the psychological department, this film claims he did murder Rabin, and everyone should be proud of him for that. So at least with this, it makes some sense. If you want to anger the public, perfect. It's a perfect scam by two Shabak agents to cover up the murder. But the baby, you got me how that works in the human mind, but that's coming up. November 4th, he's going to have a boy.
Well, how can you be absolutely certain? You know, lots of times women don't cooperate. They don't go into labor on the correct day.
She'll have a cesarean, or they'll pump something in her. They'll get it out November 4th.
Well, the thing that really doesn't make sense, but then a lot of things about the Rabin murder don't make sense. And
well,
so I'll let you pick up the story because you're the expert on it. Hold that thought for a moment. Barry, go ahead and pick up this story.
Well, the other major cover-up is a new film Well, it's been distributed widely. I've seen it on Yediot Ahronot's website, Ynet, also Israel National News. With new technology, we see the actual murder close up. They may have edited the film. I don't think so. What they did do is prove that there was a conspiracy. And they don't say that in the text leading up to the murder, the murder film. They say it proves that Amir did it. There's a few problems. What we see that we never saw before are three gunshots, all at Rabin. Well, Rabin didn't have three gunshot wounds. Well, he did, actually. One was from the front, and this was proven 2 years ago on Israeli TV, where they actually showed Rabin's x-ray, and they show a bullet from the front. This was a major triumph of mine a couple of years back when there was a documentary, and the filmmakers got Rabin's clothing, and lo and behold, there's a gunshot wound in the front of his shirt. And when that happened, by the way, I just became an overnight star in Israel. I was on four primetime TV shows in 1 week. I mean, that proved everything I've been saying in my book, Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin, that, in fact, Rabin was shot three times, once from the front. The real problem is that there was a government inquiry called the Shamgar Commission of Inquiry, and it determined that Rabin was shot twice. Now, here is the official version of the Israeli murder compared with that new film that shows him being shot three times in the back. And it is that first Yigal Amir shoots Rabin in the upper back from 50 centimeters distance. And then Shamgar claims there was a hiatus. During that hiatus, Yoram Rubin, the bodyguard who eventually did shoot Rabin, jumps on Rabin. Amir steps forward and shoots from above. The first shot hits Yoram Rubin in the shoulder, and Rubin testified to the Shamgar Commission that they felt electricity going through his shoulder, down his arm, and the third shot hits Rabin in the waist from above, from about 40 centimeters distance. Now, what I proved through the police reports was that Rabin was, in fact, shot at point-blank range, and he was, in fact, shot once from the front. Now, this film shows Rabin shot three times from the back.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. All right. Go right ahead, Barry. Sydney, Barry's talking about a new film that's just come out, and it's simply apparently very, very high definition. It suggests that Rabin was shot three times from behind. So go ahead with the story.
Well, that's what Olmert said in his memorial speech, that the gunman who shot three bullets at Rabin, well, the official Shamgar report has Rabin shot twice. Now, where are these three bullets in his back? And now here is where I'm going to change subjects a little bit. I got a few people who I respect saying in so many words that I've been proven wrong. Here's the film. Here's Amir shooting Rabin in the back. And one of the people was someone I respect a lot, and that is Aaron Klein of WorldNet Daily. Now, what he said, what do you think about the new film with the three shots? And I wrote him back, and I said, I think it's peachy. I think it's really great, because Rabin, according to the Shamgar Commission, was only shot twice. So, and I pointed out that Yoram Rubin was supposed to have been shot once from a mere three shots. And I said, Rubin isn't in the movie. That means he testified to the Shamgar Commission perjury, just perjured testimony. And then suddenly he didn't write me back. So he asked for my phone number, and I gave him my phone number. And I wrote him back, and I said, I have a feeling you want me to be wrong. And then I explained that Amir did not shoot Rubin. You can see that in the film, that Rubin perjured himself to the Shamgar Commission, and this proves the conspiracy. And he wrote me back, and he said, I don't believe anything, and and it wasn't my intention to suggest that you were wrong. I have no beliefs in this issue, which is really, really a wrong thing for a journalist to say. A journalist does have beliefs, and he knows better than this. And there was something a little funny about his reply to me. But I'm going to tell you the story of when Aaron Klein and I worked on a very major story. This was in the year 2005. I was at the Jerusalem Book Fair selling books when someone from the town of Chalamish came up to me and said, "Did you see the army base they're building on the road to Chalamish with an American flag flying at the front gate?" And I said, "What do you mean an American flag? Why should an American flag be flying at the front base?" He said, "That's what I thought." So I drove in there, and the guards just surrounded me and shooed me off. The Americans are building a base in Israel. Now, from this little hint, I took a trip. Actually, the first time was with my friend Jerry Marcel, and we had to search a little bit, but we went down the road, and there is a massive, massive base being built not far from the between the towns of Rosh Ha'Ayin and Petah Tikva. And this thing is the biggest base I've ever seen in Israel. It's huge.
Yeah. And this is what, about 2005 you were seeing this?
Yeah, it was just before the Gush Katif pullout.
Right.
I took a few pictures, went home, and I wrote the story up that I had seen this immense base with a huge American flag. And then Aaron and phoned me up and said, "I want to see the base." He was one of two reporters to phone me up, and that's when I started collecting real pictures. But Aaron came over to my place. I lived in Modi'in at the time, and that was, about 15 miles from the base. And we drove up to it, and he said, "I don't believe this thing. How come no one knows this base being built in Israel, using up like half the land along the what is called the West Bank border? I mean, this thing was as big as a city." And he said, "Let's go talk to someone inside." And we go to the base, and he takes pictures of Old Glory flying at the base sentry. There's a big American flag flying, and we take pictures of who the builders are, and the builders, strangely, are Arabic, and which was pretty darn confusing. So Aaron says, "Let's go talk to the guard." So I said, "Sure." And we start talking to the guard.
Now, is the guard an American soldier?
No, the guard is just a hired rent-a-guard.
All right, fine.
And he starts telling us a few things about this base. First of all, he tells us, "You wouldn't believe how many computers are in those buildings way back, but you can't get near them. They won't let you anywhere near them." And like I said, we took pictures of this base before we went up to the guard, and we've got pictures. Now, try and imagine a giant door with big trucks, but a little itty-bitty room, and behind it kind of a tower. Now, what was a door that big doing opening this little room? And there was no question whatsoever, these were tunnels. These were tunnels straight down. And we took pictures of those. And, we took pictures of the warehouses. And, boy, were there a lot of warehouses. So eventually, Aaron says, now he doesn't say I work for WorldNet Daily. He says I work for ABC Radio. And he says, "May I speak to the project supervisor?" And the guard makes a phone call for us, and lo and behold, we get to him. All right, so we actually get to him, and we've got this little meeting in this trailer, and he's bragging. He says this base is more than half the size of all of Tel Aviv, which I have no doubt about after seeing it. And he says it will be the largest base in Israel, and he's very proud. And we ask him, "Why are your workers not Israeli?" And he said, well, the Americans are building, the Corps of Engineers, the Army Corps of Engineers is building the base for us, and they don't want Israeli workers. And I said, you think that it's safe to have an Israel Defense Forces base built by Arabs? He says, well, that was their choice. And by the way, it is incredibly unsafe to do such a thing. And I don't even know to this day the reason for that. I guess they didn't want Israelis to know what they were building.
But of course, why would they want the Arabs to know what they're building? Because, of course, if this is for defense of Israel, well, then of course the last person you'd want to know would be members of the Arab community.
Well, we saw them in the buses, and you saw all these keffiyehs, and you saw foreign workers as well, but you didn't see any Israelis working on this site. And we found that very confusing. And what the supervisor did was he said all the rumors floating around the base, and by the way, I started all the rumors. There were no rumors. No one knew about this base. He said they're all false. This is a storage facility. And Aaron says to him, well, why would you store things deep underground? And the supervisor laughed. He laughed at us and said, no, you're making a mistake. We don't have any underground facilities. And Aaron said, well, we saw a door surrounded by large trucks and no building behind it. He said, well, if it isn't underground, why do you have this giant door and no building behind it? And he was a little stunned. He says, you don't know the engineering, and I'm not going to tell you the engineering, but it's not an underground anything. And so it was basic denial after that. And we went home, and after a couple of days, I said to Aaron, look, what are you going to do about this story? And he said, well, it looks like I'm not going to use it. And I said, can I have the pictures then? And he sent me the pictures, and I put them all over the Internet. Now, the most responses came from the REN site because I had a show with Jeff, and it was live, his pictures and me reciting what we had seen. I went over the whole visit with him, and all over the world there was suddenly this base being built by the United States, the Army Corps of Engineers, and look, I didn't know what this base was for. Until the next trip out, I got a phone call from someone named Jerry Golden, who I liked. I mean, he's a Jewish Christian, and there are very weird sides to his personality, but I thought he was an honest journalist, and he had worked with me before, and we went everywhere. We really went down the dirt roads and followed this base around, and I saw what the base was for immediately.
What is it for?
It was going to replace all the bases of Judea and Samaria. The border, and it was a long, long border. That border road was snuggling against what we call the West Bank. This was going to be Israel's protection instead of having army bases high up on the hills. With real protection, this giant base was going to house all the soldiers serving in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, in this one base, which... Oh, I hear the music.
All right, fine, but what were these tunnels? Were these some sort of a silo that you describe? Were they actually tunnels that you saw?
Oh, they were tunnels for sure, going straight underground.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish, who's beginning to explore this massive military base built by the United States for the Israelis. In fact, most Americans have never heard of it. I'd heard a reference to it. I didn't realize that Barry had been involved in the story. But the question is, why so secretive? If there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it? We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish right here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Barry, pick the story up there.
Well, what Jerry and I found way away from the warehouses, there were massive warehouses, wherever you looked. We took the road, this gravel road wasn't finished yet, and we saw holes in the hills that I would just assume were missile silos. I mean, what else could they be? There were holes surrounded by stones, and they were the size of hills. And I just assumed that you had missiles and tunnels and everything you could want in a super-secret giant base. Now, Jerry went way too far when he wrote his report. He said it was a giant concentration camp to house all the settlers when they clear them out of their houses. And, well, you know, I didn't go that far. I thought that was... I didn't believe that was true, first of all. But more to the point, I stuck with my original story that this base was, in fact, built for political reasons, that the United States was going to give Israel a super-modern base to help Israel defend itself when it gave up Judea and Samaria. And then I went looking, and then I found out that it was Benjamin Netanyahu, as prime minister, signed the agreement to build this base with the Americans, and we all know what a two-sided lecher Benjamin Netanyahu is, and this was just more proof that he sold out the country. And, well, this base, well, what can I say? America built it. Israel didn't build its own army base. I've never heard of such a thing. There was only one exception to that. It was after the Sinai Accord, when Israel had to move two air bases out of the Sinai into the Negev. The Americans helped Israel put them up. But I'd never heard of an army base being built by the American Army. And it was an extremely suspicious base. Now, going back to Aaron Klein, now, he is angry at me. He's very, very angry at me because of one paragraph I wrote once. And it wasn't meant as a criticism directly. I just know that Aaron and I discussed the Council on Foreign Relations, and he knows a lot about them. And he's very aware that the Council on Foreign Relations are ganging up on Israel. It's no great secret to him. And, well, I wrote this article. If you know it, say so already. We don't have a lot of time. We've got to identify the enemy. And he was just furious at me. Now, I'll be quite frank. You got to mention them now. You got to get this CFR out, or Israel doesn't even know who it's fighting against. Now, there was a headline yesterday, big headline, that Condoleezza Rice, of the CFR, of course, was holding discussions with Presidents Clinton and Carter on how to make the Annapolis Conference work. Clinton and Carter, of course, are both CFR. Going down this article, we discovered that she had previously sought advice from Henry Kissinger of the Council on Foreign Relations, needless to say, and Madeleine Albright of the Council on Foreign Relations. The CFR are ganging up on Israel, and in Annapolis, they are going to put the squeeze on that country, and I won't go through the background of what Kissinger did in the Yom Kippur War.
Hold on, Thought we'll be right back here. Just right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is certainly talking about the situation where Condoleezza Rice at the Council on Foreign Relations has recently met with President Clinton and President Bush. Pardon me, President Clinton and President Carter, both of the CFR, and then, of course, she had also met with Henry Kissinger, the CFR, and certainly it would appear that the CFR is going to be one of the major architects of this Annapolis meeting that's going to be held here in November, and it's been said that if this conference is not successful in creating an independent Palestinian state, that it assures there's going to be a war coming very, very soon. So pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, we can go through Carter and his phony Christianity. Clinton, I was at a press conference with Rabin and Clinton, and I got in line to ask questions, at least one question. the whole thing, the whole press conference was rigged, thoroughly rigged. And you never, Helen Thomas, Clinton points to Helen Thomas, and her question is, how was your visit, Mr. President? You know, they were just choosing their people to ask the most innocuous, worthless questions. Now, I was in line, and I was pushed out of line by Israel TV's so-called political affairs correspondent, but I was with a Christian who I knew. He just died. Oh, please, what is his name? Leave it be. The man had a prosthetic arm. He was a very good good man, and he said, President Clinton, you're a man of God. Do you know what God thinks of anyone who makes Jews abandon his land? And this was on worldwide TV, and Clinton turned absolutely beet red. And he was not expecting that question, and he wouldn't answer it. But that was the only honest question. Rabin looked absolutely drunk. I was watching his feet. He was barely standing up during this press conference. This CFR has got Israeli leadership completely controlled. The CFR and the Vatican are Israel's true blue enemies. And Aaron knows this. And I have, look, I don't know why it's forbidden to actually say the word Council on Foreign Relations.
Because if you want to keep your job, Barry, you keep quiet. I mean, you're not answerable to everybody, to anybody, nor am I. But, I mean, when you work for ABC News, when you simply don't be talking about the Council on Foreign Relations, or you're not going to be working for ABC Radio or whatever it is. Now, I think that Aaron is being circumspect, because I know people who've come out publicly in the media, talked about these things, and that simply destroyed their entire profession. So I'm sure that's the reason that he's reluctant to bring these things up.
Well, I admire Aaron very much, and I'm disappointed in him as well. But through the WorldNet Daily, he's brought out some very, very important facts. So what can I say? I go farther than him, and it bothers me that really I'm the only one mentioning that Rice, Carter, Clinton, Kissinger, and Albright are all CFR, and they're all preparing for this Annapolis conference, and nobody else is making this point. It's even worse. President Peres, murderer of Rabin, had a meeting also yesterday, 2 days ago, with Ted Turner. Now, most people wouldn't think that means very much, but you go onto that list of the 4,200 members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the founder of CNN is a longtime executive of the Council on Foreign Relations. They're all ganging up on Israel. And, well, look, those pictures of the base, I got, Aaron had a Zoom camera. We got literally inside these giant silos. We got Old Glory at the front gate. We've got the sign. They're all in my book, Bye Bye Gaza. So if anyone really wants to see what a secret base looks like, you go to www.lulu.com. In the top right-hand corner, you write in my name, Chamish, Chamish, and there it is. You want the pictures, for not a lot of money, you can buy by Gaza, you can buy Bye Bye Gaza, and you can get the pictures. So that's, whoops, music again.
Music again. We're going to be back in just a few minutes with Barry Chamish. And Barry's been telling us about this secret base that the Americans have been building in Israel, and it sounds very much like a missile base of some sort. But, of course, it's all top secret, because we wouldn't want Osama bin Laden hiding in the cave to know what's really going on. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's midnight back there where Barry is, about midnight, 30 minutes after midnight, and but Barry is good enough to be up with us. And go ahead and tell a little bit more of the story here.
Well, I don't know how much there is to say, except after I wrote my article and after I published the pictures, well, we went back to the site for my fourth time, and this time you could not get in. Old Glory was taken off the main entrance. The road that I took with Jerry Golden was blocked to traffic. I guess I had an effect because you couldn't get in there anymore. The base is up there. Now, if you reach Israel, people just go from the road to Chalamish, just 2 miles from Petah Tikva, go in about 2 miles, look to your left, you're going to see the biggest base in all of Israel, and just know it's not a warehouse base, and it was built by the Americans. That simple. And, well, as I said, I have a book where you can see the pictures. What else can you do on a radio show except go look at the pictures?
And, of course, the thing is, do you think the missiles are installed there yet? Do you think the silos are filled?
Oh, God, I don't know that one.
So nobody really knows. Nobody's been able to investigate it since you were up there a couple of years ago.
Oh, no. I broke this story. And it's a shame, really, nobody is hiring me to do this stuff, because that was a top-level mainstream media event, journalistic event, and I did it all on my lonesome. Aaron Klein did not put that story out. I understand you're going to be speaking to him next week.
Yes, I am, but on an entirely different subject.
Bring up the missile base.
Well, we're going to be talking about his latest book, so we'll see if the opportunity comes up. But I won't promise
you. Take it in. It's a good story.
Oh, I'm sure it is, and I think it's fascinating. But I think that Aaron, the reason that he's employed and that you're not is that you sometimes just come right out, you know, and say it, call it like it is. Sometimes
well,
you got
to
be a little bit more diplomatic when you're working for somebody else.
No matter what he says about me, I admire him. I think he's doing a good job under the circumstances. Let him know that I said nice, kind words about his work.
All right, I will. If the opportunity comes up, I will. But I appreciate the fact that you do care for him. Apparently, he's a very nice person. I've
yes,
never talked to him. But, you know, I think that he's trying to keep his job. And believe me, they will come after you when you tell the truth, unfortunately, as you have well found out. Hold on, Paul. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Barry Shemesh. And Barry, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get your books and your DVDs, and incidentally, that excellent DVD, which I really enjoyed, was The Return of the Giants. But they're all good, but that was especially good. Go right ahead.
Well, the website is called the Barry Shemesh website, but if you write www.barrychamers.com, you'll get to it. It'll take you there. If you want to write me, I'm at Chamers, Chamish, at NetVision, one long word, NETVISION, .net, NET, .IL. Now, I'll leave my cell phone on only for orders, please. Return of the Giants is the DVD people seem to like the most, although I have one on the Vatican's new campaign, New Crusade for Jerusalem. So my number is 904-501-7605, 904-501-7605. And you're right, my world was turned upside down. I should have gone into a PR or worked for the Jerusalem Post and just did all kinds of flack. I don't even know what the reward of what I'm doing really is, except a ton of insecurity. But what are you going to do? That's the way my life went.
But I think that what you're doing is very important, Barry. I mean, certainly everybody doesn't have the courage that you do to speak out as you do about what's going on. And I believe you've been really placed where you are, and I know it's been a great personal loss to you and a great personal expense. But I believe you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, which is why we love to have you here on Radio Liberty.
Well, vice versa.
Okay.
Now, we're putting down a record which we may not get a second chance to do, of, well, really, unfortunately, the downfall of Israel. And what we just spoke about was, in fact, the CFR. And as I'm complaining a little bit, come on, Aaron, you got to start talking about this. Israel hasn't got a long time to go if you don't. So I said so. Now, a very strange thing happened. I wrote an article, and I mentioned that the Israeli cable networks, TV networks, were being electronically blacked out all over Israel. People's screens froze, and the cable companies said that there was some sort of electronic warfare, but they couldn't describe where it was coming from. This was like 3 weeks ago. Well, a very, very odd occurrence happened. Now, I don't know if it's coincidence, but I'll tell you, here's what happened. The Israeli cable networks have decided, there are three of them, by the way, they're really owned by something called HOT. They're all joined up now with one network called HOT. They are going to take off CNN, okay, and replace it with Al Jazeera.
If you Al Jazeera is the terrorist network.
Yep. Israel is going to get its English news instead of from CNN, which was no great source to begin with. They're going to get it from here on in from Al Jazeera. What do you think about that?
I think that's the most incredible thing I ever heard. For people who don't understand, this is how, well, at least we're told, that terrorists get their information out. But I have always suspected that Al Jazeera is a front for one of the intelligence agencies. Why in the world would they allow Al Jazeera to be up on satellite? It's a satellite over in the Middle East. It's on satellite here in the United States. And this is an American satellite. And we happen to be up there right at the same satellite that on Telstar 9, on Telstar 5. So, I mean, the question is, why would they do something like that if they're really representing the enemy and the terrorists of the enemy? And I'd like to suggest that nothing is it appears to be.
No. Israel is so cockamamie. Every story is worse than the story before. All I'm doing is just pointing out the absurdity of a country determined to destroy the free-thinking sovereign peoples that once were called Israelis. Well, when they turn on their news now, they're not getting Larry King, they're getting Mahmoud el-Rashad, and that is some story. Okay? Next. Now, this is very, very upsetting. I received a phone call from a friend of mine in Mexico. His name is Francisco Gil White. A very knowledgeable man. He was fired, I believe, from the University of Pennsylvania for making the claim that the PLO's genesis comes from Nazi Germany, which it does. Every Israeli knows this. The Hajj al-Husseini met with the Nazis and formed an alliance with them, but he was fired for saying so.
No, was that the Grand Mufti you're speaking of now?
I believe so.
Okay, fine, go ahead.
I don't know if he was grand or not so grand, but in 1936 he came up with an alliance with Nazi Germany, which became the PLO, and he now has got a petition, and he wants me to put it on my news group, but he wants people to call for a vote of no confidence in the present Israeli government and new elections. And I told him I don't believe in elections. I said I believe in a complete electoral strike. I don't want people going to vote. And I don't want a vote of no confidence. We'll just get something worse. And we had this long argument. And finally I told him, Francisco, you don't know what's happening to Israelis. And I quoted a very, very upsetting study. It was printed in the Jerusalem Post by one Jonathan Rosenberg. Also this week, and a poll was taken of Israeli Jews under the age of 35, and 55% of them would not view the loss of Israel as a personal tragedy. Try and let that sink in. 55% of Israeli youth don't care if Israel lives or dies. Now, Rosenberg's analysis was that's because Israelis have lost touch with God, and they're not Jewish anymore, and this and that and that and this. And I just wrote him back. I didn't write him back. I'm telling you this. I said it's not that. This is years and years of psychological warfare against the once proud Israeli people, turning them into really, really anti-Semites. You've reached the point where they don't care if Israel lives or dies. You're not going to survive much longer when 55% of your youth, the people serving your army, don't care if the country lives or dies. You're not going to live very much longer.
Well, I think that's a rather frightening statistic, but I fear that this is probably very accurate. I think that they've just been gradually picking away and certainly eroding the belief of the young people in Israel, in the Jewish covenant of Abraham with God. And this is basically the whole concept of Israel. Here was a homeland for the Jewish people. It was their land that God had promised to them. But you take away belief in God, or you take away belief in the Jewish covenant, or the Abrahamic covenant, and what right do the Israeli people have to be there?
Well, that's profound philosophy. I just view it as extreme psychological pressure, and it could be done on any country, I suppose. There have been a lot of little countries lost in silly civil wars that are unexplainable, until you start looking at this Council on Foreign Relations again. What is being done to Israel was done to Rhodesia, South Africa, Vietnam. I mean, the list of small countries that have been brought down, you don't want to be an ally of the United States if you're a small country. That's a very, very dangerous alliance.
I think who is it who said, if you have the United States as an ally, you don't need any enemies. And that was actually the Shah's sister who made that remark. After the American government, having backed the Shah for years, then did everything they could to undercut him, to force him to leave and to bring the Ayatollahs to power. And the Shah's sister said, with enemies like the United States, you don't need enemies. So I really believe that this is true. I love my country, but I believe that they're wicked people, and we see the same enemy, and that is the Council on Foreign Relations. But what most people do not understand is the Council on Foreign Relations was formed as a front group for a secret society. And, of course, that's covered on page 952 of Professor Quigley's wonderful book, giving the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations. That's 952 of Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. So go right ahead, Barry.
Well, I think we should look at the promises of the Israeli government this week. They promised that they would cut off power to the Gaza Strip after any rocket attack. It would be gradual, like 2 hours of no electricity. And they thought that would have an effect. Well, yesterday there were 5 Qassam attacks from the Gaza Strip and there was no cutoff of electricity. Have the Israeli people been stiffed? I mean, it really, they've just been simply stiffed. And they're not going to keep this promise. They have to make that promise because the Israeli people are getting sick of being rocketed. But they're not going to keep the promise. This is the Israel of today. The government are a bunch of liars. I'm saying it nicely. They're a bunch of liars.
Well, I share your concern. And certainly with Olmert and Barak and Peres there in key positions, who really speaks for the Israeli people? And who is dedicated to the preservation of Israel? And, you know, the people many of the older people may still believe in Israel, and many of the religious Jews do. Maybe not the younger ones, but the older ones do. But, I mean, of course, with leaders like that, you don't need enemies.
No, no. Now, sort of good news for me this week. I had a long article in an Israeli magazine called Hatzofar. They interviewed me about 10 days ago. And I got 2 phone calls from it. 2 people from Israel phoned me and said the article is simply fabulous. In that article, I exposed, first of all, what's happened to me. And by the way, what's happened to me, what they've done to me, really is a minor tragedy compared to all the deaths of so many Israelis directly because of their leadership directly. But nonetheless, I complained highly that my faith has just been twisted and turned in unspeakable ways, but at least I survived. And this article came out with three pages of pictures where I finally had my say in Hebrew about what was done to me personally by the leaders of Israel. They got rid of me, and they put me in a situation of deep insecurity. I had to run from that country. I didn't think I'd survive. And they did their job on me.
Well, I tell you what, you're better off than Gary Webb, who had written an article critical of the CIA and ended up shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. So at least you're still alive, Barry. So God, I believe, has preserved you for a purpose. Maybe just to be here on Radio Liberty, maybe for other purposes, who knows. But I believe you're here for a purpose, and one day it's going to be very, very definite why you were not simply eliminated. Because if they really wanted to eliminate you, they could have.
They
but
did
obviously
eliminate me. I was dead. I was dead on the hospital table. They did eliminate me. I was revived three times. It was a miracle I survived.
I think it is. I think it's somebody's looking after you.
Well, maybe it's to send me to New York. I'll be in New York on November 3rd, the anniversary of Rabin's assassination. I will be there speaking at the Maple Street Shul on 618 Maple Street in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. If you reach that far, you'll see me at 8:30 in the evening telling the truth about the Rabin assassination. I haven't done the speech in a year. I have to repractice it, but at least some people will hear the truth from me anyways.
All right, well, if they wanted to actually get to that meeting, how would they go about doing it?
Oh, I don't know. You just go to 618 Maple, you go to the Maple Street Shul in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. I've never been there before.
All right, fine. And so basically, is it going to be expensive to get in? How are they going to have
no,
it?
No, I think it might be like $5 or something.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, and so you have somebody sponsoring it and helping
yes.
to get a crew together, people coming?
It's called TruePeace.org. That's the group sponsoring me.
All right, fine. Well, I'm so glad you're getting speaking engagements, you know, a few of them. And hopefully as time goes by, you'll have more and more. Because I think your message is extremely important. But certainly, you know, it looks to me as if this meeting they're going to have in Annapolis, Maryland here later this month in November, is a failure, that the outlook for peace, you know, will certainly be pretty well gone. In fact, I was reading
Are
today that
there's... Are you saying if it's a failure, the outlook for peace is a lot better than it was?
May pardon?
If it fails, the outlook for peace has improved.
All right.
The last thing you want is Annapolis to be a so-called success. It'll be the end of Israel.
Well, I certainly agree there, but I certainly don't you foresee a war coming in the very near future for Israel?
Oh, that's guaranteed. Anyone who believes the Arabs have stopped coveting Israel doesn't begin to understand that they will never, ever give up. A war is inevitable. The Israeli army is a lot weaker than it's ever been in its history. And the likelihood that Israel will not survive a missile war is ridiculously high. I'm extremely pessimistic about the results of any upcoming war.
All right, fine. Of course, they're talking even about the possibility of a war with Egypt as well as with Syria.
Egypt is already at war with Israel. Who is supplying Hamas with all its rockets? The Sinai Peninsula is nothing but a bus station for arms. The Egyptians have been at war. That phony Camp David peace accord, the Carter triumph, has been an absolute fiasco. Israel is just too chicken to say the obvious. Look, the old Israel would have told Egypt, if you don't stop the Sinai from becoming a transit point for arms, we are going to bomb the Aswan Dam. You're going to have a wave of water 50 feet high destroying your country if this doesn't stop. That was the old Israel. The Israel of today wants the country to be destroyed. There are no threats to Egypt, and Egypt is at war with Israel.
Well, I'm afraid you're right, and I think that, of course, the $3 billion a year the United States has been giving to Egypt has been used to build up the military of Egypt, and built up roads. I remember coming across the Sinai and seeing now they've got very nice roads there, covered up with sand, admittedly, but it'll be easy to roll their tanks right up to the border with Israel. And I believe
they won't even need to. There's enough missiles to handle the job without the tanks.
All right, fine. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because I think it's only a matter of time before this war with Syria comes, the war with Egypt comes, and certainly I fear it's going to involve Iran in one way or another. And, of course, the United States hopefully will stand with Israel when this happens.
Oh, God help us if that happens. The last thing Israel needs is the United States standing by. Israel should be left alone to fight its own battle.
Yes, but if without American support, you'd run out of ammunition and weapons in a very, very short period of time.
With American support, we're finished.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Samuelson. Explore his thoughts. Well, Barry, I understand your feeling about American support, but isn't America still the primary support of military equipment for Israel at the present time?
America is the prime support of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. If you want to fuel a war, you supply both sides.
Oh, admittedly, but of course, where will Israel get its supplies to fight at all if they don't get them from America?
Israel used to have an arms industry.
And they should have, and I wish they had one, but do they
have
one?
They did have one. We made tanks, we had planes, they were all canceled by America. Israel is dependent on America for even its boots, even its automatic weapons. We used to have wonderful weapons, the Uzi, the Galil. Now everyone's got M16s that get clogged with sand. What the relationship with America has done has made Israel hopelessly, hopelessly weak. And I'll tell you something, people don't understand, it's also a psychological war. The Israeli people will not fight with their hearts. And that, by the way, I can go into that. Maybe I will. How much time do we have?
You got about 2 minutes.
Well, all I can say to you is the CIA and Deutsch and Tenet, by the way, they're both from the Council on Foreign Relations, have been training the PLO. They've been training the PLO to be better terrorists. And the PLO have been thanking the Americans for letting them know how to really kill Israelis. Believe me, this is a double-edged sword, having America as a friend and an ally.
I think you're absolutely right. In fact, that's the interview I'm having with Aaron Klein next week, his new book on schmoozing with the terrorists, and he says exactly what you have said, and that is that America is training the terrorists in preparation for their onslaught on Israel. But none of this makes sense if you're looking at it logically.
Why interview Aaron? You already got it from me.
Oh. Well, because I got a free copy of his book. We've got to read it, and I certainly think that you and he would both agree on this. He might not be willing to say what you would say as to why America is betraying Israel.
Ask him if Deutsch and Tenet are members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
All right, I guess this evening has been Barry Samuelson. Barry, thank you so very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. Good night, and we'll talk to you probably either later this week or next week.
Next week I'll be in New York, so talk to me before I leave.
All right. Bye-bye, and God bless.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, that's Barry Samuelson. And Barry says a lot of things, but listen to what he says, because he's absolutely right. America is setting Israel up to lose, but it's also setting America up to lose, which really doesn't make sense. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, to understand why these things are taking place, why it is that America is financing terrorists throughout the world. I mean, who's the primary financier of the world terrorist movement? Why, it's Saudi Arabia. And who's financing Saudi Arabia and Pakistan? Why, your tax money, ladies and gentlemen. You really need to get the book we carry called The Devil's Game, pointing out how this whole Islamic terrorist movement was funded from America, going back for, 50 years or more. And then, of course, you need to get my pamphlets, the Foreknowledge 911, which goes into the fact that this whole radical Islamic movement. And we're talking about Al-Qaeda, we're talking about the Taliban, all funded with your money from the CIA. But we can't let the American people know that. If you'd like to get the book, The Devil's Game, if you'd like to get Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, which of course goes into how the CIA and the State Department kept Saddam Hussein in power. Here's a book written by a former agent of the CIA. And then my pamphlets on 9-1-1 prior knowledge, so they're three little pamphlets, rather inexpensive, but all the documentation is there. Now you can go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down the material, my newsletters, for free, but I think they're much more convenient to have in a pamphlet form, but you're welcome to pull them down and copy them and distribute them. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. We do hope that many of you out there will certainly want to get some of the material that we have that explains so much of what's going on today, and how it is a constant pattern to control both sides of every issue. I mean, who was it actually who funded Adolf Hitler? Why, it was American corporations, both before and during the Second World War. You need to get the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. You need to get my interview with Professor Sutton. It's available on DVD. And Professor Sutton had researched all of these subjects for many years. The DVD is entitled The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. We have a book by the same name. Oh, who funded the communists? Why, of course, your tax money. And, of course, American corporations and the Federal Reserve System. And that book would be Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. We have a great little pamphlet. It's called The Capitalist Communist Alliance. It's for my newsletter, simply taking the title from a speech that was given by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, given 1975 to the AFL-CIO, pointing out how American corporations and government had funded communism since its inception. And, of course, if you read the full pamphlet, you'll find out who it was that actually drilled those oil wells there in Russia that's made Russia the largest producer of oil in the world. We can't drill oil wells like that in America, but we could drill them over in Russia for the Russians. It was the Export-Import Bank, the Asian Development Bank, the World Monetary Fund, American tax dollars, the International Monetary Fund. I mean, it's an incredible little pamphlet. We hope you'll want to get it. Understand, you have to have an enemy if you're going to rally the people behind the government officials. That's what the war on terrorism is all about. That's why we're not closing our southern border, because the threat of terrorism is not real, but we have to convince the American people it is, and that's why we have to go through those long lines at the airports, and why we have to put up the video cameras every place, and when you want to go into a federal building, you've got to be searched, and of course, even going into many football games or into the fairs. Why, we've got to search people, because there may be terrorists out there. It's all a matter of implanting in our minds the idea that the threat of terrorism is real. At the same time, we're funding Saudi Arabia, that is funding the whole worldwide Islamic terrorist movement. Once you understand that, everything begins to make sense. I send the AI telephone number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. We do hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family and help us as we try to educate people about what's really going on. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.